Book 4 160. Argument. In this book it is proved that the extent and long duration of the Roman Empire is to be ascribed, not to Jove or the gods of the heathen, to whom individually scarce even single things in the very basest functions were believed to be entrusted, but to the one true God, the author of felicity, by whose power and judgment earthly kingdoms are founded and maintained. Chapter 1. Of the things which have been discussed in the first book. Having begun to speak of the city of God, I have thought it necessary first of all to reply to its enemies, who, eagerly pursuing earthly joys and gaping after transitory things, throw the blame of all the sorrow they suffer in them rather through the compassion of God in admonishing than his severity in punishing on the Christian religion, which is the one salutary and true religion. And since there is among them also an unlearned rabble, they are stirred up as by the authority of the learned to hate us more bitterly, thinking in their inexperience that things which have happened unwontedly in their days were not wont to happen in other times gone by. And whereas this opinion of theirs is confirmed even by those who know that it is false, and yet dissemble their knowledge in order that they may seem to have just cause for murmuring against us, it was necessary, from books in which their authors recorded and published the history of bygone times that it might be known, to demonstrate that it is far otherwise than they think. And at the same time to teach that the false gods, whom they openly worship, or still worship in secret, are most unclean spirits, and most malignant and deceitful demons, even to such a pitch that they take delight in crimes which, whether real or only fictitious, are yet their own, which it has been their will to have celebrated in honor of them at their own festivals. So that human infirmity cannot be called back from the perpetration of damnable deeds, so long as authority is furnished for imitating them that seems even divine. These things we have proved, not from our own conjectures, but partly from recent memory, because we ourselves have seen such things celebrated, and to such deities, partly from the writings of those who have left these things on record to posterity, not as if in reproach but as in honor of their own gods. Thus Varro, a most learned man among them, and of the weightiest authority, when he made separate books concerning things human and things divine, distributing some among the human, others among the divine, according to the special dignity of each, placed the scenic plays not at all among things human, but among things divine. Though, certainly, if only there were good and honest men in the state, the scenic plays ought not to be allowed even among things human. And this he did not on his own authority, but because, being born and educated at Rome, he found them among the divine things. Now, as we briefly stated in the end of the first book what we intended afterwards to discuss, and as we have disposed of a part of this in the next two books, we see what our readers will expect us now to take up. Chapter 2. Of those things which are contained in books 2 and 3. We had promised, then, that we would say something against those who attribute the calamities of the Roman Republic to our religion, and that we would recount the evils, as many and great as we could remember or might deem sufficient, which that city, or the provinces belonging to its empire, had suffered before their sacrifices were prohibited, all of which would beyond doubt have been attributed to us, if our religion had either already shone on them, or had thus prohibited their sacrilegious rites. These things we have, as we think, fully disposed of in the second and third books, treating in the second of evils in morals, which alone or chiefly are to be accounted evils. And in the third, of those which only fools dread to undergo, namely, those of the body or of outward things which for the most part the good also suffer. But those evils by which they themselves become evil, they take, I do not say patiently, but with pleasure. And how few evils have I related concerning that one city and its empire? Not even all down to the time of C.R. Augustus. What if I had chosen to recount and enlarge on those evils, not which men have inflicted on each other? Such as the devastations and destructions of war, but which happen in earthly things, from the elements of the world itself. Of such evils Apuleius speaks briefly in one passage of that book which he wrote, De Mundo, saying that all earthly things are subject to change, overthrow, and destruction. 161 For, to use his own words, by excessive earthquakes the ground has burst asunder, and cities with their inhabitants have been clean destroyed by sudden rains, whole regions have been washed away. Those also which formerly had been continents, have been insulated by strange and new come waves, and others, by the subsiding of the sea, have been made passable by the foot of man. By winds and storms, cities have been overthrown. Fires have flashed forth from the clouds, by which regions in the east being burnt up have perished. And on the western coasts the like destructions have been caused by the bursting forth of waters and floods. So, formerly, from the lofty craters of Etna, rivers of fire kindled by God have flowed like a torrent down the steep. Some, if I had wished to collect from history wherever I could, these and similar instances, where should I have finished what happened even in those times before the name of Christ had put down those of their idols, so vain and hurtful to true salvation? I promised that I should also point out which of their customs, and for what cause, the true God, in whose power all kingdoms are, had deigned to favor to the enlargement of their empire. And how those whom they think gods can have profited them nothing, but much rather hurt them by deceiving and beguiling them. So that it seems to me I must now speak of these things, and chiefly of the increase of the Roman Empire. For I have already said not a little, especially in the second book, about the many evils introduced into their manners by the hurtful deceits of the demons whom they worshipped as gods. But throughout all the three books already completed, where it appeared suitable, we have set forth how much succor God, through the name of Christ, to whom the barbarians beyond the custom of war paid so much honor, has bestowed on the good and bad, according as it is written, who maketh his sun to rise on the good and the evil, and giveth rain to the just and the unjust. 162. 161 Comp. Bacon's Essay on the Vicissitudes of Things. 162 Matthew 5:45. Chapter 3. Whether the great extent of the empire, which has been acquired only by wars, is to be reckoned among the good things either of the wise or the happy. Now, therefore, let us see how it is that they dare to ascribe the very great extent and duration of the Roman Empire to those gods whom they contend that they worship honorably, even by the obsequies of vile games in the ministry of vile men. Although I should like first to inquire for a little what reason, what prudence, there is in wishing to glory in the greatness and extent of the empire, when you cannot point out the happiness of men who are always ruling, with dark fear and cruel lust, in warlike slaughters and in blood, which, whether shed in civil or foreign war, is still human blood. So that their joy may be compared to glass in its fragile splendor, of which one is horribly afraid lest it should be suddenly broken in pieces. That this may be more easily discerned, let us not come to naught by being carried away with empty boasting, or blunt the edge of our attention by loud-sounding names of things, when we hear of peoples, kingdoms, provinces. But let us suppose the case of two men. For each individual man, like one letter in a language, is as it were the element of a city or kingdom, however far spreading in its occupation of the earth. Of these two men let us suppose that one is poor, or rather of middling circumstances, the other very rich. But the rich man is anxious with fears, pining with discontent, burning with covetousness, never secure, always uneasy, panting from the perpetual strife of his enemies, adding to his patrimony indeed by these miseries to an immense degree, and by these additions also heaping up most bitter cares. But that other man of moderate wealth is contented with a small and compact estate, most dear to his own family, enjoying the sweetest peace with his kindred, neighbors, and friends, in piety religious, benignant in mind, healthy in body, in life frugal, in manners chaste, in conscience secure. I know not whether anyone can be such a fool that he dare hesitate which to prefer. As, therefore, in the case of these two men, so in two families, in two nations, in two kingdoms, this test of tranquility holds good. And if we apply it vigilantly and without prejudice, we shall quite easily see where the mere show of happiness dwells, and where real felicity. Wherefore, if the true God is worshipped, and if he is served with genuine rites and true virtue, it is advantageous that good men should long reign both far and wide. Nor is this advantageous so much to themselves, as to those over whom they reign, for, so far as concerns themselves, their piety and probity, which are great gifts of God, suffice to give them true felicity, enabling them to live well the life that now is, and afterwards to receive that which is eternal. In this world, therefore, the dominion of good men is profitable, not so much for themselves as for human affairs. But the dominion of bad men is hurtful chiefly to themselves who rule, For they destroy their own souls by greater license in wickedness. While those who are put under them in service are not hurt except by their own iniquity. For to the just all the evils imposed on them by unjust rulers are not the punishment of crime, but the test of virtue. Therefore the good man, although he is a slave, is free. But the bad man, even if he reigns, is a slave, and that not of one man, but, what is far more grievous, of as many masters as he has vices. Of which vices when the divine scripture treats, it says, For of whom any man is overcome, to the same he is also the bond slave. 163 2 Peter 2:19 Chapter 4 How like kingdoms without justice are to robberies. Justice being taken away, then, what are kingdoms but great robberies? For what are robberies themselves, but little kingdoms? The band itself is made up of men. It is ruled by the authority of a prince. It is knit together by the pact of the confederacy. The booty is divided by the law agreed on. If, by the admittance of abandoned men, this evil increases to such a degree that it holds places, fixes abodes, takes possession of cities, and subdues peoples, it assumes the more plainly the name of a kingdom, because the reality is now manifestly conferred on it, not by the removal of covetousness, but by the addition of impunity. Indeed, that was an apt and true reply which was given to Alexander the Great by a pirate who had been seized. For when the king had asked the man what he meant by keeping hostile possession of the sea, he answered with bold pride, What thou meanest by seizing the whole earth? But because I do it with a petty ship, I am called the robber, whilst thou who dost it with a great fleet art styled emperor. 164 Nonius Marsale borrows this anecdote from Cicero Delaware Reba 3. Chapter 5 Of the runaway gladiators whose power became like that of royal dignity. I shall not therefore stay to inquire what sort of men Romulus gathered together, seeing he deliberated much about them, how, being assumed out of that life they led into the fellowship of his city, they might cease to think of the punishment they deserved, the fear of which had driven them to greater villainies. So that henceforth they might be made more peaceable members of society. But this I say, that the Roman Empire, which by subduing many nations had already grown great and an object of universal dread, was itself greatly alarmed, and only with much difficulty avoided a disastrous overthrow, because a mere handful of gladiators in Campania, escaping from the games, had recruited a great army, appointed 3 generals, and most widely and cruelly devastated Italy. Let them say what God aided these men, so that from a small and contemptible band of robbers they attained to a kingdom, feared even by the Romans, who had such great forces and fortresses. Or will they deny that they were divinely aided because they did not last long? 165 As if, indeed, the life of any man would ever lasted long. In that case, too, the gods aid no one to reign, since all individuals quickly die. Nor is sovereign power to be reckoned a benefit, because in a little time in every man, and thus in all of them one by one, it vanishes like a vapor. For what does it matter to those who worship the gods under Romulus, and are long since dead, that after their death the Roman Empire has grown so great, while they plead their causes before the powers beneath? Whether those causes are good or bad, it matters not to the question before us. And this is to be understood of all those who carry with them the heavy burden of their actions, having in the few days of their life swiftly and hurriedly passed over the stage of the imperial office, although the office itself has lasted through long spaces of time, being filled by a constant succession of dying men. If, however, even those benefits which last only for the shortest time are to be ascribed to the aid of the gods, these gladiators were not a little aided, who broke the bonds of their servile condition, fled, escaped, raised a great and most powerful army, obedient to the will and orders of their chiefs and much feared by the Roman majesty, and remaining unsubdued by several Roman generals, seized many places, and, having won very many victories, enjoyed whatever pleasures they wished, and did what their lust suggested, and, until at last they were conquered, which was done with the utmost difficulty, lived sublime and dominant. But let us come to greater matters. 165 It was extinguished by Crassus in its 3rd year. Chapter 6 concerning the covetousness of Ninus, who was the first who made war on his neighbors, that he might rule more widely. Justinus, who wrote Greek or rather foreign history in Latin, and briefly, like Trigas Pompus whom he followed, begins his work thus: in the beginning of the affairs of peoples and nations the government was in the hands of kings, who were raised to the height of this majesty not by courting the people, but by the knowledge good men had of their moderation. The people were held bound by no laws. The decisions of the princes were instead of laws. It was the custom to guard rather than to extend the boundaries of the empire. And kingdoms were kept within the bounds of each ruler's native land. Ninus, king of the Assyrians, first of all, through new lust of empire, changed the old and, as it were, ancestral custom of nations. He first made war on his neighbors, and wholly subdued as far as to the frontiers of Libya the nations as yet untrained to resist. And a little after, he says, Ninus established by constant possession the greatness of the authority he had gained. Having mastered his nearest neighbors, he went on to others, strengthened by the accession of forces, and by making each fresh victory the instrument of that which followed, subdued the nations of the whole East. Now, with whatever fidelity to fact either he or Trigas may in general have written, for that they sometimes told lies is shown by other more trustworthy writers, yet it is agreed among other authors that the kingdom of the Assyrians was extended far and wide by King Ninus. And it lasted so long that the Roman Empire has not yet attained the same age. For, as those write who have treated of chronological history, this kingdom endured for 1,240 years from the first year in which Ninus began to reign, until it was transferred to the Medes. But to make war on your neighbors, and thence to proceed to others, and through mere lust of dominion to crush and subdue people who do you no harm, what else is this to be called than great robbery? Chapter 7. Whether earthly kingdoms in their rise and fall have been either aided or deserted by the help of the gods. If this kingdom was so great and lasting without the aid of the gods, why is the ample territory and long duration of the Roman Empire to be ascribed to the Roman gods? For whatever is the cause in it, the same is in the other also. But if they contend that the prosperity of the other also is to be attributed to the aid of the gods, I ask of which? For the other nations whom Ninus overcame, did not then worship other gods? Or if the Assyrians had gods of their own, who, so to speak, were more skillful workmen in the construction and preservation of the empire, whether are they dead, since they themselves have also lost the empire? Or, having been defrauded of their pay, or promised a greater, have they chosen rather to go over to the Medes, and from them again to the Persians, because Cyrus invited them, and promised them something still more advantageous? This nation, indeed, since the time of the kingdom of Alexander the Macedonian, which was as brief in duration as it was great in extent, has preserved its own empire, and at this day occupies no small territories in the East. If this is so, then either the gods are unfaithful, who desert their own and go over to their enemies, which Camillus, who is but a man, did not do, when, being victor and subduer of a most hostile state, although he had felt that Rome, for whom he had done so much, was ungrateful, yet afterwards, forgetting the injury and remembering his native land, he freed her again from the Gauls. Or they are not so strong as gods ought to be, since they can be overcome by human skill or strength. Or if, when they carry on war among themselves, the gods are not overcome by men, but some gods who are peculiar to certain cities are perchance overcome by other gods, it follows that they have quarrels among themselves which they uphold, each for his own part. Therefore a city ought not to worship its own gods, but rather others who aid their own worshippers. Finally, whatever may have been the case as to this change of sides, or flight, or migration, or failure in battle on the part of the gods, the name of Christ had not yet been proclaimed in those parts of the earth when these kingdoms were lost and transferred through great destructions in war. For if, after more than 1,200 years, when the kingdom was taken away from the Assyrians, the Christian religion had there already preached another eternal kingdom, and put a stop to the sacrilegious worship of false gods, what else would the foolish men of that nation have said, but that the kingdom which had been so long preserved, could be lost for no other cause than the desertion of their own religions and the reception of Christianity, in which foolish speech that might have been uttered, Let those we speak of observe their own likeness, and blush, if there is any sense of shame in them, because they have uttered similar complaints. Although the Roman Empire is afflicted rather than changed, a thing which has befallen it in other times also, before the name of Christ was heard, and it has been restored after such affliction, a thing which even in these times is not to be despaired of. For who knows the will of God concerning this matter? Chapter 8. Which of the gods can the Romans suppose presided over the increase and preservation of their empire, when they have believed that even the care of single things could scarcely be committed to single gods? Next let us ask, if they please, out of so great a crowd of gods which the Romans worship, whom in especial, or what gods they believe to have extended and preserved that empire? Now, surely of this work, which is so excellent and so very full of the highest dignity, they dare not ascribe any part to the goddess Colchina. 166 or to Volupia, who has her appellation from voluptuousness. Or to Libentina, who has her name from lust. Or to Vaticanus, who presides over the screaming of infants. Or to Canina, who rules over their cradles. But how is it possible to recount in one part of this book all the names of gods or goddesses, which they could scarcely comprise in great volumes, distributing among these divinities their peculiar offices about single things? They have not even thought that the charge of their lands should be committed to any one god, but they have entrusted their farms to Rusina, the ridges of the mountains to Jugatinus. Over the downs they have set the goddess Calatina. Over the valleys, Valonia. Nor could they even find one Sagitia so competent that they could commend to her care all their corn crops at once. But so long as their seed corn was still under the ground, they would have the goddess Sia set over it. Then, whenever it was above ground and formed straw, they set over it the goddess Sagitia. And when the grain was collected and stored, they set over it the goddess Tutelina, that it might be kept safe. Who would not have thought that goddess Sagitia sufficient to take care of the standing corn until it had passed from the first green blades to the dry ears? Yet she was not enough for men, who love a multitude of gods, that the miserable soul, despising the chaste embrace of the one true God, should be prostituted to a crowd of demons. Therefore they set Proserpina over the germinating seeds, over the joints and knots of the stems, the god Nododis, over the sheaths enfolding the ears, the goddess Valentina. When the sheaths opened that the spike might shoot forth, it was ascribed to the goddess Paedlana. When the stems stood all equal with new ears, because the ancients described this equalizing by the term hostire, it was ascribed to the goddess Hostilina. When the grain was in flower, it was dedicated to the goddess Flora. When full of milk, to the god Lacternus. When maturing, to the goddess Matuta. When the crop was runcated, that is, removed from the soil, to the goddess Rudsina. Nor do I yet recount them all, for I am sick of all this, though it gives them no shame. Only, I have said these very few things, in order that it may be understood they dare by no means say that the Roman Empire has been established, increased, and preserved by their deities, who had all their own functions assigned to them in such a way, that no general oversight was entrusted to any one of them. When, therefore, could Sagitia take care of the empire, who was not allowed to take care of the corn and the trees? When could Canina take thought about war, whose oversight was not allowed to go beyond the cradles of the babies? When could Nododis give help in battle, who had nothing to do even with the sheath of the ear, but only with the knots of the joints? Everyone sets a porter at the door of his house, and because he is a man, he is quite sufficient. But these people have set three gods, Forculus to the doors, Cardia to the hinge, Limentinus to the threshold. 167 Thus Forculus could not at the same time take care also of the hinge and the threshold. 166 Colchina, supposed by Lactantius de falsa relig. 120 Cyprian de idol. Vanet, and Augustine Infra, c. 23 to be the goddess of the Clacca, or sewage of Rome. Others, however, suppose it to be equivalent to Cloacina, a title given to Venus, because the Romans after the end of the Sabine War purified themselves clear in the vicinity of her statue. 167 Forculum Foribus, Cardim Cardini, Limentinum Limini. Chapter 9. Whether the great extent and long duration of the Roman Empire should be ascribed to Jove, whom his worshippers believed to be the chief god. Therefore omitting, or passing by for a little, that crowd of petty gods, we ought to inquire into the part performed by the great gods, whereby Rome has been made so great as to reign so long over so many nations. Doubtless, therefore, this is a work of Jove. For they will have it that he is the king of all the gods and goddesses, as is shown by his scepter and by the capital on the lofty hill. Concerning that god they publish a saying which, although that of a poet, is most apt, all things are full of Jove. 168 Varro believes that this god is worship, although called by another name, even by those who worship one god alone without any image. But if this is so, why has he been so badly used at Rome and indeed by other nations too, that an image of him should be made? A thing which was so displeasing to Varro himself, that although he was overborne by the perverse custom of so great a city, he had not the least hesitation in both saying and writing, that those who have appointed images for the people have both taken away fear and added error. 168 Virgil, Eclog. 360. Chapter 10. What opinions those have followed who have set divers gods over divers parts of the world. Why, also, is Juno united to him as his wife, who is called at once sister and yoke fellow? 169 Because, say they, we have Jove in the ether, Juno in the air. And these two elements are united, the one being superior, the other inferior. It is not he, then, of whom it is said, all things are full of Jove, if Juno also fills some part. Does each fill either, and are both of this couple in both of these elements, and in each of them at the same time? Why, then, is the ether given to Jove, the air to Juno? Besides, these two should have been enough. Why is it that the sea is assigned to Neptune, the earth to Pluto? And that these also might not be left without mates, Cilicia is joined to Neptune, Proserpine to Pluto. For they say that, as Juno possesses the lower part of the heavens, that is, the air, so Cilicia possesses the lower part of the sea, and Proserpine the lower part of the earth. They seek how they may patch up these fables, but they find no way. For if these things were so, their ancient sages would have maintained that there are three chief elements of the world, not four, in order that each of the elements might have a pair of gods. Now, they have positively affirmed that the ether is one thing, the air another. But water, whether higher or lower, is surely water. Suppose it ever so unlike, can it ever be so much so as no longer to be water? And the lower earth, by whatever divinity it may be distinguished, what else can it be than earth? Lo, then, since the whole physical world is complete in these four or three elements, where shall Minerva be? What should she possess? What should she fill? For she is placed in the capital along with these two, although she is not the offspring of their marriage. Or if they say that she possesses the higher part of the ether, and on that account the poets have feigned that she sprang from the head of Jove, why then is she not rather reckoned queen of the gods, because she is superior to Jove? Is it because it would be improper to set the daughter before the father? Why, then, is not that rule of justice observed concerning Jove himself toward Saturn? Is it because he was conquered? Have they fought then? By no means, say they. That is an old wife's fable. Lo, we are not to believe fables, and must hold more worthy opinions concerning the gods. Why, then, do they not assign to the father of Jove a seat, if not of higher, at least of equal honor? Because Saturn, say they, is length of time. 170 Therefore they who worship Saturn worship time. And it is insinuated that Jupiter, the king of the gods, was born of time. For is anything unworthy said when Jupiter and Juno are said to have been sprung from time, if he is the heaven and she is the earth, since both heaven and earth have been made, and are therefore not eternal? For their learned and wise men have this also in their books. Nor is that saying taken by Virgil out of poetic figments, but out of the books of philosophers. Then ether, the Father Almighty, in copious showers descended into his spouse's glad bosom, making it fertile. 171. That is, into the bosom of Tellus, or the earth. Although here, also, they will have it that there are some differences, and think that in the earth herself Terra is one thing, Tellus another, and Telumo another. And they have all these as gods, called by their own names, distinguished by their own offices, and venerated with their own altars and rites. This same earth also they call the mother of the gods, so that even the fictions of the poets are more tolerable, if, according, not to their poetical but sacred books, Juno is not only the sister and wife, but also the mother of Jove. The same earth they worship as Ceres, and also as Vesta. While yet they more frequently affirm that Vesta is nothing else than fire, pertaining to the hearths, without which the city cannot exist. And therefore virgins are wont to serve her, because as nothing is born of a virgin, so nothing is born of fire. But all this nonsense ought to be completely abolished and extinguished by him who is born of a virgin. For who can bear that, while they ascribe to the fire so much honor, and, as it were, chastity, they do not blush sometimes even to call Vesta Venus, so that honored virginity may vanish in her handmaidens. For if Vesta is Venus, how can virgins rightly serve her by abstaining from venery? Are there two Venuses, the one a virgin, the other not a maid? Or rather, are there three, one the goddess of virgins, who is also called Vesta, another the goddess of wives, and another of harlots? To her also the Phoenicians offered a gift by prostituting their daughters before they united them to husbands. 172 Which of these is the wife of Vulcan? Certainly not the virgin, since she has a husband. Far be it from us to say it is the harlot, lest we should seem to wrong the son of Juno and fellow worker of Minerva. Therefore it is to be understood that she belongs to the married people. But we would not wish them to imitate her in what she did with Mars. Again, say they, you return to fables. What sort of justice is that, to be angry with us because we say such things of the gods, and not to be angry with themselves, who in their theaters most willingly behold the crimes of the gods? And, a thing incredible, if it were not thoroughly well proved, these very theatric representations of the crimes of the gods have been instituted in honor of these same gods. 169 Virgil, Ide, 147. 170 Cicero Delaware Nat. Dior 225. 171 Virgil, Georg. 2325, 326. 172 Eusebius, De PRP. Evang. 110. Chapter 11. Concerning the many gods whom the pagan doctors defend as being one and the same Jove. Let them therefore assert as many things as ever they please in physical reasonings and disputations. One, while let Jupiter be the soul of this corporeal world, who fills and moves that whole mass, constructed and compacted out of four, or as many elements as they please. Another while, let him yield to his sister and brothers their parts of it. Now let him be the ether, that from above he may embrace Juno, the air spread out beneath. Again, let him be the whole heaven along with the air, and impregnate with fertilizing showers and seeds the earth, as his wife, and, at the same time, his mother, for this is not vile in divine beings. And yet again, that it may not be necessary to run through them all, let him, the one God, of whom many think it has been said by a most noble poet, "For God pervadeth all things, all lands, and the tracts of the sea, and the depth of the heavens," 173. Let it be him who in the ether is Jupiter, in the air, Juno, in the sea, Neptune, in the lower parts of the sea, Cilicia, in the earth, Pluto, in the lower part of the earth, Proserpine, on the domestic hearths, Vesta, in the furnace of the workmen, Vulcan, among the stars, Sol and Luna, and the stars, in divination, Apollo, in merchandise, Mercury, in Janus, the initiator, in Terminus, the Terminator, Saturn, in time, Mars and Bellona, in war, Liber, in vineyards, Ceres, in cornfields, Diana, in forests, Minerva, in learning. Finally, let it be him who is in that crowd, as it were, of plebeian gods. Let him preside under the name of Liber over the seed of men, and under that of Libera over that of women. Let him be Diaspiter, who brings forth the birth to the light of day. Let him be the goddess Mina, whom they set over the menstruation of women. Let him be Lucina, who is invoked by women in childbirth, let him bring help to those who are being born, by taking them up from the bosom of the earth, and let him be called Apis, let him open the mouth in the crying babe, and be called the god Vaticanus, let him lift it from the earth, and be called the goddess Lavana. Let him watch over cradles, and be called the goddess Canina, let it be no other than he who is in those goddesses, who sing the fates of the newborn, and are called Karmates, let him preside over fortuitous events, and be called Fortuna in the goddess Rumina, let him milk out the breast to the little one, because the ancients term the breast Ruma in the goddess Putina, let him administer drink in the goddess Aduka, let him supply food from the terror of infants, let him be styled Paventia from the hope which comes, Venablia from voluptuousness, Volupia from action, Agener from the stimulants by which man is spurred on to much action, let him be named the goddess Stimula, let him be the goddess Strenia, for making strenuous Numeria, who teaches to number, Camina, who teaches to sing, let him be both the god Consus for granting counsel, and the goddess Antia for inspiring sentences, let him be the goddess Juventus, who, after the robe of boyhood is laid aside, takes charge of the beginning of the youthful age, let him be Fortuna Barbata, who endues adults with a beard, whom they have not chosen to honor. So that this divinity, whatever it may be, should at least be a male god, named either Barbatus, from Barba, like Nodotus, from Notus. Or, certainly, not Fortuna, but because he has beards, Fortunius, let him, in the god Jugatinus, yoke couples in marriage. And when the girdle of the virgin wife is loosed, let him be invoked as the goddess Virginensis, let him be Mutinus or Tutornus, who, among the Greeks, is called Priabus. If they are not ashamed of it, let all these which I have named, and whatever others I have not named, for I have not thought fit to name all, let all these gods and goddesses be that one Jupiter, whether, as some will have it, all these are parts of him, or are his powers, as those think who are pleased to consider him the soul of the world, which is the opinion of most of their doctors, and these the greatest. If these things are so, how evil they may be, I do not yet meanwhile inquire, what would they lose, if they, by a more prudent abridgment, should worship one god? For what part of him could be contemned if he himself should be worshipped? But if they are afraid lest parts of him should be angry at being passed by or neglected, then it is not the case, as they will have it, that this whole is as the life of one living being, which contains all the gods together, as if they were its virtues, or members, or parts. But each part has its own life separate from the rest, if it is so that one can be angered, appeased, or stirred up more than another. But if it is said that all together, that is, the whole Jove himself, would be offended if his parts were not also worshipped singly and minutely, it is foolishly spoken. Surely none of them could be passed by if he who singly possesses them all should be worshipped. For, to omit other things which are innumerable, when they say that all the stars are parts of Jove, and are all alive, and have rational souls, and therefore without controversy are gods, can they not see how many they do not worship, to how many they do not build temples or set up altars, and to how very few, in fact, of the stars they have thought of setting them up and offering sacrifice? If, therefore, those are displeased who are not severally worshipped, do they not fear to live with only a few appeased, while all heaven is displeased? But if they worship all the stars because they are part of Jove whom they worship, by the same compendious method they could supplicate them all in him alone. For in this way no one would be displeased, since in him alone all would be supplicated. No one would be contemned, instead of there being just cause of displeasure given to the much greater number who are passed by and the worship offered to some. Especially when Priapus, stretched out in vile nakedness, is preferred to those who shine from their supernal abode. 173 Virgil, Georg. 4221-222. Chapter 12. Concerning the opinion of those who have thought that God is the soul of the world, and the world is the body of God. Ought not men of intelligence, and indeed men of every kind, to be stirred up to examine the nature of this opinion? For there is no need of excellent capacity for this task, that putting away the desire of contention, they may observe that if God is the soul of the world, and the world is as a body to him, who is the soul, he must be one living being consisting of soul and body, and that this same God is a kind of womb of nature containing all things in himself, so that the lives and souls of all living things are taken, according to the manner of each one's birth, out of a soul which vivifies that whole mass, and therefore nothing at all remains which is not a part of God. And if this is so, who cannot see what impious and irreligious consequences follow, such as that whatever one may trample, he must trample a part of God, and in slaying any living creature, a part of God must be slaughtered. But I am unwilling to utter all that may occur to those who think of it, yet cannot be spoken without irreverence. Chapter 13. Concerning those who assert that only rational animals are parts of the one God. But if they contend that only rational animals, such as men, are parts of God, I do not really see how, if the whole world is God, they can separate beasts from being parts of him. But what need is there of striving about that? Concerning the rational animal himself, that is, man, what more unhappy belief can be entertained than that a part of God is whipped when a boy is whipped? And who, unless he is quite mad, could bear the thought that parts of God can become lascivious, iniquitous, impious, and altogether damnable? In brief, why is God angry at those who do not worship him, since these offenders are parts of himself? It remains, therefore, that they must say that all the gods have their own lives, that each one lives for himself, and none of them is a part of anyone, but that all are to be worshipped, at least as many as can be known and worshipped. For they are so many it is impossible that all can be so. And of all these, I believe that Jupiter, because he presides as king, is thought by them to have both established and extended the Roman Empire. For if he has not done it, what other god do they believe could have attempted so great a work, when they must all be occupied with their own offices and works, nor can one intrude on that of another? Could the kingdom of men then be propagated and increased by the king of the gods? Chapter 14. The enlargement of kingdoms is unsuitably ascribed to Jove. For if, as they will have it, Victoria is a goddess, she alone would suffice for this business. Here, first of all, I ask, why even the kingdom itself is not some god? For why should not it also be so, if Victory is a goddess? Or what need is there of Jove himself in this affair, if Victory favors and is propitious, and always goes to those whom she wishes to be victorious? With this goddess favorable and propitious, even if Jove was idle and did nothing, what nations could remain unsubdued, what kingdom would not yield? But perhaps it is displeasing to good men to fight with most wicked unrighteousness, and provoke with voluntary war neighbors who are peaceable and do no wrong, in order to enlarge a kingdom? If they feel thus, I entirely approve and praise them. Chapter 15. Whether it is suitable for good men to wish to rule more widely. Let them ask, then, whether it is quite fitting for good men to rejoice in extended empire. For the iniquity of those with whom just wars are carried on favors the growth of a kingdom, which would certainly have been small if the peace and justice of neighbors had not by any wrong provoked the carrying on of war against them. And human affairs being thus more happy, all kingdoms would have been small, rejoicing in neighborly concord. And thus there would have been very many kingdoms of nations in the world, as there are very many houses of citizens in a city. Therefore, to carry on war and extend a kingdom over wholly subdued nations seems to bad men to be felicity, to good men necessity. But because it would be worse that the injurious should rule over those who are more righteous, therefore even that is not unsuitably called felicity. But beyond doubt it is greater felicity to have a good neighbor at peace, than to conquer a bad one by making war. Your wishes are bad, when you desire that one whom you hate or fear should be in such a condition that you can conquer him. If, therefore, by carrying on wars that were just, not impious or unrighteous, the Romans could have acquired so great an empire, ought they not to worship as a goddess even the injustice of foreigners? For we see that this has cooperated much in extending the empire, by making foreigners so unjust that they became people with whom just wars might be carried on, and the empire increased. And why may not injustice, at least that of foreign nations, also be a goddess, if fear and dread and egg have deserved to be Roman gods? By these two, therefore, that is, by foreign injustice, and the goddess Victoria, for injustice stirs up causes of wars, and Victoria brings these same wars to a happy termination, the empire has increased, even although Jove has been idle. For what part could Jove have here, when those things which might be thought to be his benefits are held to be gods, called gods, worshipped as gods, and are themselves invoked for their own parts? He also might have some part here, if he himself might be called empire, just as she is called victory. Or if empire is the gift of Jove, why may not victory also be held to be his gift? And it certainly would have been held to be so, had he been recognized and worshipped, not as a stone in the capital, but as the true King of Kings and Lord of Lords. Chapter 16. What was the reason why the Romans, in detailing separate gods for all things and all movements of the mind, chose to have the Temple of Quiet outside the gates? But I wonder very much, that while they assigned to separate gods single things, and well nigh all movements of the mind, that while they invoked the goddess Agenoria, who should excite to action, the goddess Stimula, who should stimulate to unusual action, the goddess Mercia, who should not move men beyond measure, but make them, as Pomponia says, merced that is, too slothful and inactive, the goddess Strenua, who should make them strenuous, and that while they offered to all these gods and goddesses solemn and public worship, they should yet have been unwilling to give public acknowledgement to her whom they name Quies because she makes men quiet, but built her temple outside the Colline gate. Whether was this a symptom of an unquiet mind, or rather was it thus intimated that he who should persevere in worshipping that crowd, not, to be sure, of gods, but of demons, could not dwell with quiet? To which the true physician calls, saying, "Learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and ye shall find rest unto your souls." Chapter 17. Whether, if the highest power belongs to Jove, Victoria also ought to be worshipped? Or do they say, perhaps, that Jupiter sends the goddess Victoria, and that she, as it were acting in obedience to the king of the gods, comes to those to whom he may have dispatched her, and takes up her quarters on their side? This is truly said, not of Jove, whom they, according to their own imagination, feign to be king of the gods, but of him who is the true eternal king, because he sends, not victory, who is no person, but his angel, and causes whom he pleases to conquer, whose counsel may be hidden, but cannot be unjust. For if victory is a goddess, why is not triumph also a god, and joined to victory either as husband, or brother, or son? Indeed, they have imagined such things concerning the gods, that if the poets had feigned the like, and they should have been discussed by us, they would have replied that they were laughable figments of the poets not to be attributed to true deities. And yet they themselves did not laugh when they were, not reading of the poets, but worshipping in the temple such doting follies. Therefore they should entreat Jove alone for all things, and supplicate him only. For if victory is a goddess, and is under him as her king, wherever he might have sent her, she could not dare to resist and do her own will rather than his. Chapter 18. With what reason they who think felicity and fortune goddesses have distinguished them? What shall we say, besides, of the idea that Felicity also is a goddess? She has received a temple. She has merited an altar. Suitable rites of worship are paid to her. She alone, then, should be worshipped. For where she is present, what good thing can be absent? But what does a man wish, that he thinks Fortune also a goddess and worships her? Is Felicity one thing, Fortune another? Fortune, indeed, may be bad as well as good. But Felicity, if it could be bad, would not be Felicity. Certainly we ought to think all the gods of either sex, if they also have sex, are only good. This says Plato. This say other philosophers. This say all estimable rulers of the Republic and the nations. How is it, then, that the goddess Fortune is sometimes good, sometimes bad? Is it perhaps the case that when she is bad she is not a goddess, but is suddenly changed into a malignant demon? How many fortunes are there then? Just as many as there are men who are fortunate, that is, of good fortune. But since there must also be very many others who at the very same time are men of bad fortune, could she, being one and the same fortune, be at the same time both bad and good, the one to these, the other to those? She who is the goddess, is she always good? Then she herself is Felicity. Why, then, are two names given her. Yet this is tolerable. For it is customary that one thing should be called by two names. But why different temples, different altars, different rituals? There is a reason, say they, because Felicity is she whom the good have by previous merit. But fortune, which is termed good without any trial of merit, befalls both good and bad man fortuitously, whence also she is named fortune. How, therefore, is she good, who without any discernment comes both to the good and to the bad? Why is she worship, who is thus blind, running at random on anyone whatever, so that for the most part she passes by her worshippers, and cleaves to those who despise her? Or if her worshippers profit somewhat, so that they are seen by her and loved, then she follows merit, and does not come fortuitously. What, then, becomes of that definition of fortune? What becomes of the opinion that she has received her very name from fortuitous events? For it profits one nothing to worship her if she is truly fortune. But if she distinguishes her worshippers, so that she may benefit them, she is not fortune. Or does Jupiter send her to, whether he pleases? Then let him alone be worshipped. Because fortune is not able to resist him when he commands her, and sends her where he pleases. Or, at least, let the bad worshipper, who do not choose to have merit by which the goddess Felicity might be invited. Chapter 19. Concerning Fortuna Mulibris. 174. To this supposed deity, whom they call Fortuna, they ascribe so much, indeed, that they have a tradition that the image of her, which was dedicated by the Roman matrons, and called Fortuna Mulibris, has spoken, and has said, once and again, that the matrons pleased her by their homage. Which, indeed, if it is true, ought not to excite our wonder. For it is not so difficult for malignant demons to deceive, and they ought the rather to advert to their wits and wiles, because it is that goddess who comes by haphazard who has spoken, and not she who comes to reward merit. For Fortuna was loquacious, and Felicitas mute. And for what other reason but that men might not care to live rightly, having made Fortuna their friend, who could make them fortunate without any good desert? And truly, if Fortuna speaks, she should at least speak, not with a womanly, but with a manly voice. Lest they themselves who have dedicated the image should think so great a miracle has been wrought by feminine loquacity. 174. The Feminine Fortune. Chapter 20. Concerning virtue and faith, which the pagans have honored with temples and sacred rites, passing by other good qualities, which ought likewise to have been worshipped, if deity was rightly attributed to these. They have made virtue also a goddess, which, indeed, if it could be a goddess, had been preferable to money. And now, because it is not a goddess, but a gift of God, let it be obtained by prayer from him, by whom alone it can be given, and the whole crowd of false gods vanishes. But why is faith believed to be a goddess, and why does she herself receive temple and altar? For whoever prudently acknowledges her makes his own self an abode for her. But how do they know what faith is, of which it is the prime and greatest function that the true God may be believed in? But why had not virtue sufficed? Does it not include faith also? Forasmuch as they have thought proper to distribute virtue into four divisions, prudence, justice, fortitude, and temperance, and as each of these divisions has its own virtues, faith is among the parts of justice, and has the chief place with as many of us as know what that saying means, the just shall live by faith. 175. But if faith is a goddess, I wonder why these keen lovers of a multitude of gods have wronged so many other goddesses, by passing them by, when they could have dedicated temples and altars to them likewise. Why has temperance not deserved to be a goddess, when some Roman princes have obtained no small glory on account of her? Why, in fine, is fortitude not a goddess, who aided Mucius when he thrust his right hand into the flames? Who aided Curtius, when for the sake of his country he threw himself headlong into the yawning earth? Who aided Decius the sire, and Decius the son, when they devoted themselves for the army? Though we might question whether these men had true fortitude, if this concerned our present discussion. Why have prudence and wisdom merited no place among the gods? Is it because they are all worshipped under the general name of virtue itself? Then they could thus worship the true God also, of whom all the other gods are thought to be parts. But in that one name of virtue is comprehended both faith and chastity, which yet have obtained separate altars in temples of their own. 175 Habit 2:4. Chapter 21. That although not understanding them to be the gifts of God, they ought at least to have been content with virtue and felicity. These, not verity but vanity, has made goddesses. For these are gifts of the true God, not themselves goddesses. However, where virtue and felicity are, what else is sought for? What can suffice the man whom virtue and felicity do not suffice? For surely virtue comprehends all things we need do, felicity all things we need wish for. If Jupiter, then, was worshipped in order that he might give these two things, because, if extent and duration of empire is something good, it pertains to this same felicity, why is it not understood that they are not goddesses, but the gifts of God? But if they are judged to be goddesses, then at least that other great crowd of gods should not be sought after. 4. Having considered all the offices which their fancy has distributed among the various gods and goddesses, let them find out, if they can, anything which could be bestowed by any god whatever on a man possessing virtue, possessing felicity. What instruction could be sought either from Mercury or Minerva, when virtue already possessed all in herself? Virtue, indeed, is defined by the ancients as itself the art of living well and rightly. Hence, because virtue is called in Greek arete, it has been thought the Latins have derived from it the term art. But if virtue cannot come except to the clever, what need was there of the godfather Catius, who should make men cautious, that is, acute, when felicity could confer this? Because, to be born clever belongs to felicity. Whence, although goddess felicity could not be worshipped by one not yet born, in order that, being made his friend, she might bestow this on him, yet she might confer this favor on parents who were her worshippers, that clever children should be born to them. What need had women in childbirth to invoke Lucina, when, if felicity should be present, they would have, not only a good delivery, but good children too? What need was there to commend the children to the goddess Ops when they were being born? To the god Vaticanus in their birth cry? To the goddess Canina when lying cradled? To the goddess Remina when sucking? To the god Statilinus when standing? To the goddess Adiona when coming? To Abiona when going away? To the goddess Mens that they might have a good mind? To the god Voluminous, and the goddess Volumna, that they might wish for good things? To the nuptial gods, that they might make good matches? To the rural gods, and chiefly to the goddess Fructesca herself, that they might receive the most abundant fruits? To Mars and Bellona, that they might carry on war well? To the goddess Victoria, that they might be victorious? To the god Honor, that they might be honored? To the goddess Pecunia, that they might have plenty money? To the god Aeschylus, and his son Argentinus, that they might have brass and silver coin? For they set down Aeschylus as the father of Argentinus for this reason, that brass coin began to be used before silver. But I wonder Argentinus has not begotten Arinus, since gold coin also has followed. Could they have him for a god, they would prefer Arinus both to his father Argentinus and his grandfather Aeschylus, just as they set Jove before Saturn. Therefore, what necessity was there on account of these gifts, either of soul, or body, or outward estate, to worship and invoke so great a crowd of gods, all of whom I have not mentioned, nor have they themselves been able to provide for all human benefits, minutely and singly methodized, minute and single gods, when the one goddess Felicity was able, with the greatest ease, compendiously to bestow the whole of them? Nor should any other be sought after, either for the bestowing of good things, or for the averting of evil. For why should they invoke the goddess Fasonia for the weary? For driving away enemies, the goddess Pelonia. For the sick, as a physician, either Apollo or Calapius, or both together if there should be great danger? Neither should the god Spinintus be entreated that he might root out the thorns from the fields. Nor the goddess Rubigo that the mildew might not come, Felicitas alone being present and guarding, either no evils would have arisen, or they would have been quite easily driven away. Finally, since we treat of these two goddesses, virtue and felicity, if felicity is the reward of virtue, she is not a goddess, but a gift of God. But if she is a goddess, Why may she not be said to confer virtue itself, inasmuch as it is a great felicity to attain virtue? Chapter 22. Concerning the knowledge of the worship due to the gods, which Varro glories in having himself conferred on the Romans. What is it, then, that Varro boasts he has bestowed as a very great benefit on his fellow citizens, because he not only recounts the gods who ought to be worshipped by the Romans, but also tells what pertains to each of them? Just as it is of no advantage, he says, to know the name and appearance of any man who is a physician, and not know that he is a physician, so, he says, it is of no advantage to know well that Calepius is a god, if you are not aware that he can bestow the gift of health, and consequently do not know why you ought to supplicate him. He also affirms this by another comparison, saying, no one is able, not only to live well, but even to live at all, if he does not know who is a smith, who a baker, who a weaver, from whom he can seek any utensil, whom he may take for a helper, whom for a leader, whom for a teacher. Asserting, that in this way it can be doubtful to know one, that thus the knowledge of the gods is useful, if one can know what force, and faculty, or power any god may have in anything, for from this we may be able, he says, to know what god we ought to call to, and invoke for any cause. Lest we should do as too many are wont to do, and desire water from liver, and wine from lymphs. Very useful, forsooth. Who would not give this man thanks if he could show true things, and if he could teach that the one true God, from whom all good things are, is to be worshipped by men? Chapter 23. Concerning Felicity, whom the Romans, who venerate many gods, for a long time did not worship with divine honor, though she alone would have sufficed instead of all. But how does it happen, if their books and rituals are true, and Felicity is a goddess, that she herself is not appointed as the only one to be worshipped, since she could confer all things, and all at once make men happy? For who wishes anything for any other reason than that he may become happy? Why was it left to Lucullus to dedicate a temple to so great a goddess at so late a date, and after so many Roman rulers? Why did Romulus himself, ambitious as he was of founding a fortunate city, not erect a temple to this goddess before all others? Why did he supplicate the other gods for anything, since he would have lacked nothing had she been with him? For even he himself would neither have been first a king, then afterwards, as they think, a god, if this goddess had not been propitious to him. Why, therefore, did he appoint as gods for the Romans, Janus, Jove, Mars, Picus, Faunus, Tiburnus, Hercules, and others, if there were more of them? Why did Titus Tatius add Saturn, Ops, Sun, Moon, Vulcan, Light, and whatever others he added, among whom was even the goddess Clochina, while Felicity was neglected? Why did Numa appoint so many gods and so many goddesses without this one? Was it perhaps because he could not see her among so great a crowd? Certainly King Hostilius would not have introduced the new gods Fear and Dread to be propitiated, if he could have known or might have worshipped this goddess. For, in presence of Felicity, Fear and Dread would have disappeared, I do not say propitiated, but put to flight. Next, I ask, how is it that the Roman Empire had already immensely increased before anyone worshipped Felicity? Was the empire, therefore, more great than happy? For how could true felicity be there, where there was not true piety? For piety is the genuine worship of the true God, and not the worship of as many demons as there are false gods. Yet even afterwards, when Felicity had already been taken into the number of the gods, the great infelicity of the civil wars ensued. Was Felicity perhaps justly indignant, both because she was invited so late, and was invited not to honor, but rather to reproach, because along with her was worshipped Priapus, and Clochina, and Fear and Dread, and Aeg, and others which were not gods to be worshipped, but the crimes of the worshippers? Last of all, if it seemed good to worship so great a goddess along with a most unworthy crowd, why at least was she not worshipped in a more honorable way than the rest? For is it not intolerable that Felicity is placed neither among the gods Constantes, 176 whom they allege to be admitted into the council of Jupiter, nor among the gods whom they term select? Some temple might be made for her which might be preeminent, both in loftiness of sight and dignity of style. Why, indeed, not something better than is made for Jupiter himself? For who gave the kingdom even to Jupiter but Felicity? I am supposing that when he reigned he was happy. Felicity, however, is certainly more valuable than a kingdom. For no one doubts that a man might easily be found who may fear to be made a king. But no one is found who is unwilling to be happy. Therefore, if it is thought they can be consulted by augury, or in any other way, the gods themselves should be consulted about this thing, whether they may wish to give place to Felicity. If, perchance, the place should already be occupied by the temples and altars of others, where a greater and more lofty temple might be built to Felicity, even Jupiter himself might give way, so that Felicity might rather obtain the very pinnacle of the Capitoline Hill. For there is not anyone who would resist Felicity, except, which is impossible, one who might wish to be unhappy. Certainly, if he should be consulted, Jupiter would in no case do what those three gods, Mars, Terminus, and Juventus, did, who positively refused to give place to their superior and king. For, as their books record, when King Tarquin wished to construct the capital, and perceived that the place which seemed to him to be the most worthy and suitable was preoccupied by other gods, not daring to do anything contrary to their pleasure, and believing that they would willingly give place to a god who was so great, and was their own master, because there were many of them there when the capital was founded, he inquired by augury whether they chose to give place to Jupiter, and they were all willing to remove thence except those whom I have named, Mars, Terminus, and Juventus. And therefore the capital was built in such a way that these three also might be within it, yet with such obscure signs that even the most learned men could scarcely know this. Surely, then, Jupiter himself would by no means despise Felicity, as he was himself despised by Terminus, Mars, and Juventus. But even they themselves who had not given place to Jupiter, would certainly give place to Felicity, who had made Jupiter king over them. Or if they should not give place, they would act thus not out of contempt of her, but because they chose rather to be obscure in the house of Felicity, than to be eminent without her in their own places. Thus the goddess Felicity being established in the largest and loftiest place, the citizens should learn whence the furtherance of every good desire should be sought. And so, by the persuasion of nature herself, the superfluous multitude of other gods being abandoned, Felicity alone would be worshipped, prayer would be made to her alone, her temple alone would be frequented by the citizens who wish to be happy, which no one of them would not wish. And thus Felicity, who is sought for from all the gods, would be sought for only from her own self. For who wishes to receive from any god anything else than Felicity, or what he supposes to tend to Felicity? Wherefore, if Felicity has it in her power to be with what man she pleases and she has it if she is a goddess, what folly is it, after all, to seek from any other god her whom you can obtain by request from her own self? Therefore they ought to honor this goddess above other gods, even by dignity of place. For, as we read in their own authors, the ancient Romans paid greater honors to I know not what Semanus, to whom they attributed nocturnal thunderbolts, than to Jupiter, to whom diurnal thunderbolts were held to pertain. But, after a famous and conspicuous temple had been built to Jupiter, owing to the dignity of the building, the multitude resorted to him in so great numbers, that scarce one can be found who remembers even to have read the name of Semanus, which now he cannot once hear named. But if Felicity is not a goddess, because, as is true, it is a gift of God, that God must be sought who has power to give it, and that hurtful multitude of false gods must be abandoned which the vain multitude of foolish men follows after, making gods to eat self of the gifts of God, and offending himself whose gifts they are by the stubbornness of a proud will. For he cannot be free from infelicity who worships Felicity as a goddess, and forsakes God, the giver of felicity. Just as he cannot be free from hunger who licks a painted loaf of bread, and does not buy it of the man who has a real one. 176 So-called from the consent or harmony of the celestial movements of these gods. Chapter 24. The reasons by which the pagans attempt to defend their worshipping among the gods the divine gifts themselves. We may, however, consider their reasons. Is it to be believed, say they, that our forefathers were besought it even to such a degree as not to know that these things are divine gifts, and not gods? But as they knew that such things are granted to no one, except by some god freely bestowing them, They called the gods whose names they did not find out by the names of those things which they deemed to be given by them, sometimes slightly altering the name for that purpose, as, for example, from war they have named Bellona, not Bellum. From cradles, Kanina, not Kun. From standing corn, Sagisha, not Sedges. From apples, Pomona, not Pomum. From oxen, Bubona, not Boss. Sometimes, again, with no alteration of the word, just as the things themselves are named, so that the goddess who gives money is called Pecunia, and money is not thought to be itself a goddess, so a Virtus, who gives virtue. Honor, who gives honor. Concordia, who gives concord. Victoria, who gives victory. So, they say, when Felicitas is called a goddess, what is meant is not the thing itself which is given, but that deity by whom felicity is given. Chapter 25. Concerning the one God only to be worshipped, who, although his name is unknown, is yet deemed to be the giver of felicity. Having had that reason rendered to us, we shall perhaps much more easily persuade, as we wish, those whose heart has not become too much hardened. For if now human infirmity has perceived that felicity cannot be given except by some god, if this was perceived by those who worship so many gods, at whose head they set Jupiter himself, if, in their ignorance of the name of him by whom felicity was given, they agreed to call him by the name of that very thing which they believed he gave, then it follows that they thought that felicity could not be given even by Jupiter himself, whom they already worship, but certainly by him whom they thought fit to worship under the name of felicity itself. I thoroughly affirm the statement that they believed felicity to be given by a certain god whom they knew not. Let him therefore be sought after, let him be worshipped, and it is enough. Let the train of innumerable demons be repudiated, and let this god suffice every man whom his gift suffices. For him, I say, God the giver of felicity will not be enough to worship, for whom felicity itself is not enough to receive. But let him for whom it suffices and man has nothing more he ought to wish for serve the one God, the giver of felicity. This God is not he whom they call Jupiter. For if they acknowledged him to be the giver of felicity, they would not seek, under the name of felicity itself, for another god or goddess by whom felicity might be given. Nor could they tolerate that Jupiter himself should be worshipped with such infamous attributes. For he is said to be the debaucher of the wives of others. He is the shameless lover and ravisher of a beautiful boy. Chapter 26. Of the scenic plays, the celebration of which the gods have exacted from their worshippers. But, says Cicero, Homer invented these things, and transferred things human to the gods. I would rather transfer things divine to us. 177. The poet, by ascribing such crimes to the gods, has justly displeased the grave man. Why, then, are the scenic plays, where these crimes are habitually spoken of, acted, exhibited, in honor of the gods, reckoned among things divine by the most learned men? Cicero should exclaim, not against the inventions of the poets, but against the customs of the ancients. Would not they have exclaimed in reply, "What have we done?" The gods themselves have loudly demanded that these plays should be exhibited in their honor, have fiercely exacted them, have menaced destruction unless this was performed, have avenged its neglect with great severity, and have manifested pleasure at the reparation of such neglect. Among their virtuous and wonderful deeds the following is related. It was announced in a dream to Titus Latinius, a Roman rustic, that he should go to the Senate and tell them to recommence the games of Rome, because on the first day of their celebration a condemned criminal had been led to punishment in sight of the people, an incident so sad as to disturb the gods who were seeking amusement from the games. And when the peasant who had received this intimation was afraid on the following day to deliver it to the Senate, it was renewed next night in a severe form. He lost his son, because of his neglect. On the third night he was warned that a yet graver punishment was impending, if he should still refuse obedience. When even thus he did not dare to obey, he fell into a virulent and horrible disease. But then, on the advice of his friends, he gave information to the magistrates, and was carried in a litter into the Senate, and having, on declaring his dream, immediately recovered strength, went away on his own feet whole. 178. The Senate, amazed at so great a miracle, decreed that the games should be renewed at fourfold cost. What sensible man does not see that men, being put upon by malignant demons, from whose domination nothing save the grace of God through Jesus Christ our Lord sets free, had been compelled by force to exhibit to such gods as these, plays which, if well advised, they should condemn as shameful. Certain it is that in these plays the poetic crimes of the gods are celebrated, yet they are plays which were re-established by decree of the Senate, under compulsion of the gods. In these plays the most shameless actors celebrated Jupiter as the corrupter of chastity, and thus gave him pleasure. If that was a fiction, he would have been moved to anger. But if he was delighted with the representation of his crimes, even although fabulous, then, when he happened to be worshipped, who but the devil could be served? Is it so that he could found, extend, and preserve the Roman Empire, who is more vile than any Roman man whatever, to whom such things were displeasing? Could he give felicity who was so infelicitously worshipped, and who, unless he should be thus worshipped, was yet more infelicitously provoked to anger? 177 Tusk. QT 126. 178 Livy, 236. Cicero Delaware Divin. 26. Chapter 27. Concerning the three kinds of gods about which the Pontiff Essiola has discoursed. It is recorded that the very learned Pontiff Essiola 179 had distinguished about three kinds of gods, one introduced by the poets, another by the philosophers, another by the statesmen. The first kind he declares to be trifling, because many unworthy things have been invented by the poets concerning the gods. The second does not suit states, because it contains some things that are superfluous, and some, too, which it would be prejudicial for the people to know. It is no great matter about the superfluous things, for it is a common saying of skillful lawyers, superfluous things do no harm. 180 But what are those things which do harm when brought before the multitude? These, he says, that Hercules, Calliope, Castor and Pollux, are not gods. For it is declared by learned men that these were but men, and yielded to the common lot of mortals. What else? That states have not the true images of the gods. Because the true God has neither sex, nor age, nor definite corporeal members. The Pontiff is not willing that the people should know these things. For he does not think they are false. He thinks it expedient, therefore, that states should be deceived in matters of religion. Which Varro himself does not even hesitate to say in his books about things divine. Excellent religion. To which the weak, who requires to be delivered, may flee for succor. And when he seeks for the truth by which he may be delivered, it is believed to be expedient for him that he be deceived. And, truly, in these same books, Essiola is not silent as to his reason for rejecting the poetic sort of gods, to wit, because they so disfigure the gods that they could not bear comparison even with good men, when they make one to commit theft, another adultery. Or, again, to say or do something else basely and foolishly. As that three goddesses contested with each other the prize of beauty, and the two vanquished by Venus destroyed Troy. That Jupiter turned himself into a bull or swan that he might copulate with someone. That a goddess married a man, and Saturn devoured his children. That, in fine, there is nothing that could be imagined, either of the miraculous or vicious, which may not be found there, and yet is far removed from the nature of the gods. O chief Pontiff Essiola, take away the plays if thou art able. Instruct the people that they may not offer such honors to the immortal gods, in which, if they like, they may admire the crimes of the gods, and, so far as it is possible, may, if they please, imitate them. But if the people shall have answered thee, you, O Pontiff, have brought these things in among us, then ask the gods themselves at whose instigation you have ordered these things, that they may not order such things to be offered to them. For if they are bad, and therefore in no way to be believed concerning the majority of the gods, the greater is the wrong done the gods about whom they are fain with impunity. But they do not hear thee, they are demons, they teach wicked things, they rejoice in vile things. Not only do they not count it a wrong if these things are fain about them, but it is a wrong they are quite unable to bear if they are not acted at their stated festivals. But now, if thou wouldst call on Jupiter against them, chiefly for that reason that more of his crimes are wont to be acted in the scenic plays, is it not the case that, Although you call him God Jupiter, by whom this whole world is ruled and administered, it is he to whom the greatest wrong is done by you, because you have thought he ought to be worshipped along with them, and have styled him their king? 179 Called by Cicero de Orator, 139 The most eloquent of lawyers, and the best skilled lawyer among eloquent men. 180 Superflu and non-nocent. Chapter 28. Whether the worship of the gods has been of service to the Romans in obtaining and extending the empire. Therefore such gods, who are propitiated by such honors, or rather are impeached by them, for it is a greater crime to delight in having such things said of them falsely, than even if they could be said truly, could never by any means have been able to increase and preserve the Roman Empire. For if they could have done it, they would rather have bestowed so grand a gift on the Greeks, who, in this kind of divine things, that is, in scenic plays, have worshipped them more honorably and worthily, although they have not exempted themselves from those slanders of the poets, by whom they saw the gods torn in pieces, giving them license to ill-use any man they pleased, and have not deemed the scenic players themselves to be base, but have held them worthy even of distinguished honor. But just as the Romans were able to have gold money, although they did not worship a god or Rhenus, so also they could have silver and brass coin, and yet worship neither Argentinus nor his father Aesculenus. And so of all the rest, which it would be irksome for me to detail. It follows, therefore, both that they could not by any means attain such dominion if the true God was unwilling, and that if these gods, false and many, were unknown or contemned, and he alone was known and worshipped with sincere faith and virtue, they would both have a better kingdom here, whatever might be its extent, and whether they might have one here or not, would afterwards receive an eternal kingdom. Chapter 29. Of the falsity of the augury by which the strength and stability of the Roman Empire was considered to be indicated. For what kind of augury is that which they have declared to be most beautiful, and to which I referred a little ago, that Mars, and Terminus, and Juventus would not give place even to Jove, the king of the gods? For thus, they say, it was signified that the nation dedicated to Mars, that is, the Roman, should yield to none the place it once occupied. Likewise, that on account of the god Terminus, no one would be able to disturb the Roman frontiers. And also, that the Roman youth, because of the goddess Juventus, should yield to no one. Let them see, therefore, how they can hold him to be the king of the gods, and the giver of their own kingdom, if these augury set him down for an adversary, to whom it would have been honorable not to yield. However, if these things are true, they need not be at all afraid. For they are not going to confess that the gods who would not yield to Jove have yielded to Christ. For, without altering the boundaries of the empire, Jesus Christ has proved himself able to drive them, not only from their temples, but from the hearts of their worshippers. But, before Christ came in the flesh, and, indeed, before these things which we have quoted from their books could have been written, but yet after that auspice was made under King Tarquin, the Roman army has been divers times scattered or put to flight, and has shown the falseness of the auspice, which they derive from the fact that the goddess Juventus had not given place to Jove. And the nation dedicated to Mars was trodden down in the city itself by the invading and triumphant Gauls. And the boundaries of the empire, through the falling away of many cities to Hannibal, had been hemmed into a narrow space. Thus the beauty of the auspices is made void, and there has remained only the contumacy against Jove, not of gods, but of demons. For it is one thing not to have yielded, and another to have returned whither you have yielded. Besides, even afterwards, in the oriental regions, the boundaries of the Roman Empire were changed by the will of Hadrian. For he yielded up to the Persian Empire those three noble provinces, Armenia, Mesopotamia, and Assyria. Thus that god Terminus, who according to these books was the guardian of the Roman frontiers, and by that most beautiful auspice had not given place to Jove, would seem to have been more afraid of Hadrian, a king of men, than of the king of the gods. The aforesaid provinces having also been taken back again, almost within our own recollection the frontier fell back, when Julian, given up to the oracles of the gods, with immoderate daring ordered the Vetulian ships to be set on fire. The army being thus left destitute of provisions, and he himself also being presently killed by the enemy, and the legions being hard-pressed, while dismayed by the loss of their commander, they were reduced to such extremities that no one could have escaped, unless by articles of peace the boundaries of the empire had then been established where they still remain. Not, indeed, with so great a loss as was suffered by the concession of Hadrian, but still at a considerable sacrifice. It was a vain augury, then, that the god Terminus did not yield to Jove, since he yielded to the will of Hadrian, and yielded also to the rashness of Julian, and the necessity of Jovinian. The more intelligent and grave Romans have seen these things, but have had little power against the custom of the state, which was bound to observe the rites of the demons. Because even they themselves, although they perceived that these things were vain, yet thought that the religious worship which is due to God should be paid to the nature of things which is established under the rule and government of the one true God, serving, as saith the Apostle, the creature more than the Creator, who is blessed forevermore. 181 The help of this true God was necessary to send holy and truly pious men, who would die for the true religion that they might remove the false from among the living. 181 Romans 1:25. Chapter 30. What kind of things even their worshippers have owned they have thought about the gods of the nations. Cicero the augur laughs at auguries, and reproves men for regulating the purposes of life by the cries of crows and jackdaws. 182 But it will be said that an academic philosopher, who argues that all things are uncertain, is unworthy to have any authority in these matters. In the second book of his De Natura Deorum, 183 he introduces Lucilius Balbus, who, after showing that superstitions have their origin in physical and philosophical truths, expresses his indignation at the setting up of images and fabulous notions, speaking thus: Do you not therefore see that from true and useful physical discoveries the reason may be drawn away to fabulous and imaginary gods? This gives birth to false opinions and turbulent errors, and superstitions well nigh old wifish. For both the forms of the gods, and their ages, and clothing, and ornaments, are made familiar to us. Their genealogies, too, their marriages, kinships, and all things about them, are debased to the likeness of human weakness. They are even introduced as having perturbed minds. For we have accounts of the lusts, cares, and angers of the gods. Nor, indeed, as the fables go, have the gods been without their wars and battles. And that not only when, as in Homer, some gods on either side have defended two opposing armies, but they have even carried on wars on their own account, as with the Titans or with the giants. Such things it is quite absurd either to say or to believe they are utterly frivolous and groundless. Behold, now, what is confessed by those who defend the gods of the nations. Afterwards he goes on to say that some things belong to superstition, but others to religion, which he thinks good to teach according to the Stoics. For not only the philosophers, he says, but also our forefathers, have made a distinction between superstition and religion. For those, he says, who spent whole days in prayer, and offered sacrifice, that their children might outlive them, are called superstitious. 184 Who does not see that he is trying, while he fears the public prejudice, to praise the religion of the ancients, and that he wishes to disjoin it from superstition, but cannot find out how to do so? For if those who prayed and sacrificed all day were called superstitious by the ancients, were those also called so who instituted what he blames the images of the gods of diverse age and distinct clothing, and invented the genealogies of gods, their marriages, and kinships? When, therefore, these things are found fault with as superstitious, he implicates in that fault the ancients who instituted and worshipped such images. Nay, he implicates himself, who, with whatever eloquence he may strive to extricate himself and be free, was yet under the necessity of venerating these images. Nor dared he so much as whisper in a discourse to the people what in this disputation he plainly sounds forth. Let us Christians, therefore, give thanks to the Lord our God, not to heaven and earth, as that author argues, but to him who has made heaven and earth. Because these superstitions, which that Balbus, like a babbler, 185 scarcely reprehends, he, by the most deep lowliness of Christ, by the preaching of the apostles, by the faith of the martyrs dying for the truth and living with the truth, has overthrown, not only in the hearts of the religious, but even in the temples of the superstitious, by their own free service. 182 Dadivan 2. 37. 183 Sik. Dinat. Diorum, Lib. 2c. 28. 184 Superstition, from Supersts. Against his etymology of Cicero, see Lact. Inst. Div 428. 185 Balbus, from Balbutines, stammering, babbling. Chapter 31. Concerning the opinions of Varro, who, while reprobating the popular belief, thought that their worship should be confined to one god, though he was unable to discover the true god. What says Varro himself, whom we grieve to have found, although not by his own judgment, placing the scenic plays among things divine? When in many passages he is exhorting, like a religious man, to the worship of the gods, does he not in doing so admit that he does not in his own judgment believe those things which he relates that the Roman state has instituted? So that he does not hesitate to affirm that if he were founding a new state, he could enumerate the gods and their names better by the rule of nature? But being born into a nation already ancient, he says that he finds himself bound to accept the traditional names and surnames of the gods, and the histories connected with them, and that his purpose in investigating and publishing these details is to incline the people to worship the gods, and not to despise them. By which words this most acute man sufficiently indicates that he does not publish all things, because they would not only have been contemptible to himself, but would have seemed despicable even to the rabble, unless they had been passed over in silence. I should be thought to conjecture these things, unless he himself, in another passage, had openly said, in speaking of religious rites, that many things are true which it is not only not useful for the common people to know, but that it is expedient that the people should think otherwise, even though falsely, and therefore the Greeks have shut up the religious ceremonies and mysteries in silence, and within walls. In this he no doubt expresses the policy of the so-called wise men by whom states and peoples are ruled. Yet by this crafty device the malign demons are wonderfully delighted, who possess alike the deceivers and the deceived, and from whose tyranny nothing sets free save the grace of God through Jesus Christ our Lord. The same most acute and learned author also says, that those alone seem to him to have perceived what God is, who have believed him to be the soul of the world, governing it by design and reason. 186 And by this, it appears, that although he did not attain to the truth, for the true God is not a soul, but the maker and author of the soul, yet if he could have been free to go against the prejudices of custom, he could have confessed and counseled others that the one God ought to be worshipped, who governs the world by design and reason. So that on the subject only this point would remain to be debated with him, that he had called him a soul, and not rather the creator of the soul. He says, also, that the ancient Romans, for more than 170 years, worshipped the gods without an image. 187 And if this custom, he says, could have remained till now, the gods would have been more purely worshipped. In favor of this opinion, he cites as a witness among others the Jewish nation. Nor does he hesitate to conclude that passage by saying of those who first consecrated images for the people, that they have both taken away religious fear from their fellow citizens, and increased error, wisely thinking that the gods easily fall into contempt when exhibited under the stolidity of images. But as he does not say they have transmitted error, but that they have increased it, he therefore wishes it to be understood that there was error already when there were no images. Wherefore, when he says they alone have perceived what God is who have believed him to be the governing soul of the world, and thinks that the rites of religion would have been more purely observed without images, who fails to see how near he has come to the truth? For if he had been able to do anything against so inveterate an error, he would certainly have given it as his opinion both that the one God should be worshipped, and that he should be worshipped without an image. And having so nearly discovered the truth, perhaps he might easily have been put in mind of the mutability of the soul, and might thus have perceived that the true God is that immutable nature which made the soul itself. Since these things are so, whatever ridicule such men have poured in their writings against the plurality of the gods, they have done so rather as compelled by the secret will of God to confess them, than as trying to persuade others. If, therefore, any testimonies are adduced by us from these writings, They are addressed for the confutation of those who are unwilling to consider from how great and malignant a power of the demons the singular sacrifice of the shedding of the most holy blood and the gift of the imparted spirit can set us free. 186 C. Cicero, Delaware, Nat. Dior 1-2. 187 Plutarch's Numa, c. 8. Chapter 32. In what interest the princes of the nations wished false religions to continue among the people subject to them. Varro says also, concerning the generations of the gods, that the people have inclined to the poets rather than to the natural philosophers. And that therefore their forefathers, that is, the ancient Romans, believed both in the sex and the generations of the gods, and settled their marriages. Which certainly seems to have been done for no other cause except that it was the business of such men as were prudent and wise to deceive the people in matters of religion, and in that very thing not only to worship, but also to imitate the demons, whose greatest lust is to deceive. For just as the demons cannot possess any but those whom they have deceived with guile, so also men in princely office, not indeed being just, but like demons, have persuaded the people in the name of religion to receive as true those things which they themselves knew to be false. In this way, as it were, binding them up more firmly in civil society, so that they might in like manner possess them as subjects. But who that was weak and unlearned could escape the deceits of both the princes of the state and the demons? Chapter 33. That the times of all kings and kingdoms are ordained by the judgment and power of the true God. Therefore that God, the author and giver of felicity, because he alone is the true God, himself gives earthly kingdoms both to good and bad. Neither does he do this rashly, and, as it were, fortuitously, because he is God not fortune, but according to the order of things and times, which is hidden from us, but thoroughly known to himself. Which same order of times, however, he does not serve as subject to it, but himself rules as Lord and appoints as governor. Felicity he gives only to the good. Whether a man be a subject or a king makes no difference. He may equally either possess or not possess it. And it shall be full in that life where kings and subjects exist no longer. And therefore earthly kingdoms are given by him both to the good and the bad. Lest his worshippers, still under the conduct of a very weak mind, should covet these gifts from him as some great things. And this is the mystery of the Old Testament, in which the New was hidden, that there even earthly gifts are promised those who were spiritual understanding even then, although not yet openly declaring, both the eternity which was symbolized by these earthly things, and in what gifts of God true felicity could be found. Chapter 34. Concerning the kingdom of the Jews, which was founded by the one and true God, and preserved by him as long as they remained in the true religion. Therefore, that it might be known that these earthly good things, after which those pant who cannot imagine better things, remain in the power of the one God himself, not of the many false gods whom the Romans have formerly believed worthy of worship, he multiplied his people in Egypt from being very few, and delivered them out of it by wonderful signs. Nor did their women invoke Lucina when their offspring was being incredibly multiplied. And that nation having increased incredibly, he himself delivered, he himself saved them from the hands of the Egyptians, who persecuted them, and wished to kill all their infants. Without the goddess Rumina they sucked. Without Canina they were cradled, without Iduka and Patina they took food and drink. Without all those pure gods they were educated. Without the nuptial gods they were married. Without the worship of Priapus they had conjugal intercourse. Without invocation of Neptune the divided sea opened up a way for them to pass over, and overwhelmed with its returning waves their enemies who pursued them. Neither did they consecrate any goddess Mania when they received manna from heaven. Nor, when the smitten rock poured forth water to them when they thirsted, did they worship nymphs and lymphs. Without the mad rites of Mars and Bellona they carried on war. And while, indeed, they did not conquer without victory, yet they did not hold it to be a goddess, but the gift of their god. Without Sagisha they had harvests. Without Bubona, oxen. Honey without Melona. Apples without Pomona and, in a word, everything for which the Romans thought they must supplicate so great a crowd of false gods, they received much more happily from the one true God. And if they had not sinned against him with impious curiosity, which seduced them like magic arts, and drew them to strange gods and idols, and at last led them to kill Christ, their kingdom would have remained to them, and would have been, if not more spacious, yet more happy, than that of Rome. And now that they are dispersed through almost all lands and nations, it is through the providence of that one true God. That whereas the images, altars, groves, and temples of the false gods are everywhere overthrown, and their sacrifices prohibited, it may be shown from their books how this has been foretold by their prophets so long before. Lest, perhaps, when they should be read in ours, they might seem to be invented by us. But now, reserving what is to follow for the following book, we must here set a bound to the prolixity of this one. 160 inches Augustine's letter to Evodius 169, which was written towards the end of the year 415, he mentions that this fourth book and the following one were begun and finished during that same year,